Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live, and today we're going to explore the wonders of our bodies, and we are honored to have on a very informative person. Dr. Diane Perlov is the heads up all the exhibitions at the California Science Center, and right now they have the Body Worlds exhibit, which a lot of anticipation for a long time in this coming to Los Angeles. I got to go through the exhibit a couple days ago, and it's really amazing the things I learned about my own body and my own health. This will be good for you in terms of your own health and learning about your body. You'll hear a little bit about the exhibit, which you can go down and see at the California Science Center. So we'll be back in about 30 seconds with Dr. Diane Perlov.
You know, when it comes to talk shows, my friend Harvey's all ears, especially when it comes to listening to Rich Rossi Live.
Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and we're going to talk about our bodies in the exhibit Body Worlds, and we're going to line one. And Dr. Diane Perlov, thank you so much for bringing this exhibit here to Los Angeles.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Now, when I tell my friends about the exhibit, and I wonder if you get this too, when they hear it's real human bodies, some of them get a little squeamish at first. Do you get that reaction sometimes?
Yes, from people who have never seen the exhibit before, a Body Worlds exhibit, sometimes they do. But it's interesting. I mean, the fact that they're real human bodies makes a difference. It's what makes it so compelling and makes us pay attention and makes us learn from them.
Yeah, I you know, that factor about, oh, it's real human bodies, you know, you end up so drawn into the things you're learning, and it becomes so fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know some mm-hmm. people have had that issue, like with cultures, with funerals and things. They don't like if the casket's open, and I don't know if it's the fear of the body, the corpse or the body, but some people, if they get past that, this is so amazing what we learn about our bodies. And prior to walking through myself, I was had real high blood pressure. It spiked real high, and my doctor was worried. And there were so many things that, like, you had a section on blood pressure, and I took my blood pressure there, and so much about supporting health there and the way we eat. And it really, I was surprised just how much I learned. In fact, Richard, who works with me, said, you know, I learned so much more about the body than I ever learned in school walking through this exhibit.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the most compelling exhibits in that regard is the obesity slice, because I think you think that, you know, the fat is just underneath the skin, but when you see the slice, that's where you really realize that the fat gets in throughout the whole body, and it gets in the organs and around all your organs. And when you see it visually, it really can have an impact to help you to, you know, change your eating habits.
Mm. Yeah, and there was the man there, I think they said he might have been 300 pounds, that died at age 50. And, you know, just looking at how the formation, I could see it around his neck and his head. And quite frankly, it happens to me when I put on weight, my chin kind of gets out there, more of a double chin effect, and my whole facial, you know, it's still me, but you know, my facial, you know, starts to change. And it talked about that in the obesity part, that you know, how the facial and everything, it really makes me want to make sure I get healthier and stay healthy, because I'm a bit overweight myself.
Yeah, me too. The other thing that we've seen in the exhibit is when is around the smoker's lung. The smoker's lung is absolutely black, and next to it is this cup that tells you if you smoke 20 cigarettes a day in a year, you will have this cup of tar in your lungs. And we've seen so many parents and children look at that, and the children are just like grossed out. and it's just such a learning lesson for them, and that hopefully they won't ever smoke. And the parents love that, because then they say, see, don't smoke. This is what your lungs would look like.
Yeah, I have to tell you, you know, all the don't smoke tricks growing up with, they've had these horrible commercials with the person speaking with the emphysema and all that. That actual lung, I can't think of a better deterrent. When I saw that black lung, I could not believe it.
Mm-hmm. And then there's one next to it. There's that slice that shows the lung that has emphysema. And it shows the holes in the lung where the tissue has been really eaten away, plus all the pockmarks. It's very visual. And that's I think, part of the strength of the exhibit. And I should note that, you know, all of these specimens come from body donors, you know, people who, during their lifetime, you know, bequeath that when they die, their bodies would be used for this exhibition. They could also be organ donors, but what is not good for organ donation, that could be used to put on exhibit for teaching people. And I've met a lot of these body donors, and they're really passionate about educating the public about how our body works.
Amazing. Now, it said at the beginning that the donors, we don't have any information on in the exhibit who they are, but I have to admit, as I walked through, I did wonder, I wonder who these people were. That would be interesting to have known, but I totally understand their anonymity, but I did feel a little curious, I must confess.
Yeah, they have about 16,000 donors total. 14,000 of those are German, just because his headquarters are in Germany.
Yes.
And so it's just more logical. He's more famous there, and most of them are German, but none of them come from China. So that's one thing that we looked at in our ethics review, because there's some controversy over the bodies from China, and none of his come from there. And we were able to verify that by looking through all of the records.
Is that because of the human rights violations there?
Well, it's because you don't know if they're really donated or not.
I see. Yeah.
You know, so this is, you know, this way he can confirm, you know, that all of these bodies are donated.
And that's Dr. von Hagen, who invented this whole plastination process. You have at the very end a video explaining that process. For listeners, but all of you, particularly anywhere near California or that can get to California, you don't want to miss this exhibit while it's here. And by the way, how long is it at the Science Center? It's a couple more months, is it?
No, it's going to be here through the holiday season.
Oh, it's going to be here for
the
rest
the end
of the
year.
Year. Oh, great.
Yes.
That gives everyone a good chance to see it again. And I have friends who've actually went through a couple times. So he invented this process. Is it, I guess it's even different from what they do in funeral homes to you know, make the body presentable for a memorial. They do different chemicals and things. But this is even more so to preserve it for the exhibition, this plastination process, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does it he invented these, not only did he invent the process, but the type of polymer that's used.
Mm-hmm.
And he's continually experimenting with different kinds of polymers to make the body hold its color, to make it be pliable the way he wants it, to just have it make the processing easier. I mean, he starts out when he gets the body, he puts it in formaldehyde immediately to stop decomposition. Then they do the dissection, and then they go through this process of fluid replacement where all of the fluids are dissolved and replaced then by this polymer. And then after that, it's soft, so then it's posed in these different positions, and then it's cured. It's basically hardened. And he said it will last as long as the mummies last. It'll last thousands of years.
You know, speaking of mummies, they in Egypt, they were amazing. When I was over in Florence, Italy, and they had this exhibition of some of the mummies, how well-preserved they were, and the powerful pharaohs that had all the resources to preserve their bodies. And I thought, well, I wonder if a wealthy person that wanted to preserve their body after death, if anyone's ever wanted to do this. You know, I know that's a crazy, maybe morbid question, but I wondered if someone would want to take his process for themselves just to keep their body from decomposition, you know, after death.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, this process takes a year. It takes almost a year per body, and he's got a big, big facility in Germany to do this.
Wow.
It's not easy, and it's not a cheap process.
Yeah. You mentioned the obesity. Another thing that struck me was the different countries. That was fascinating, and it showed the different countries, the obesity rates, the health issues that tend to be prevalent. I think it was Japan that had the best in terms of longevity and lack of obesity. Was it Japan?
I can't remember. Yes, I don't remember that. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it was
Japan.
But
it was wonderful because it showed visually sort of what people eat in a year,
yeah.
And it was really a stark difference.
When people come to America, you know, that was the big payoff of. It was almost like the punchline when we got to America. Everyone's nodding and laughing, and you know, you have the KFC, you didn't say KFC, you just had fried chicken there, but you have McDonald's and different things.
Mm.
And I think it said, if I recall, that we were, I think, highest in sugar consumption and like second in obesity. And it was just,
yeah.
I was kind of surprised Australia was high in obesity. I'm not sure if it's the fatty meats or what it was, but it was just so eye-opening to see how the way we eat, the health problems we have a cultural aspect that the people around us and how they eat and how they behave, you know, maybe I think one of the exhibits mentioned even our family systems, you know, if a lot of people in our family eat a certain way or our culture or our country, that's really, it's
mm-hmm.
really a village, you know, it takes a village for us to get sometimes bad habits or good habits sometimes, huh?
Oh, yeah, that's true, and especially the way we've combined this fast food that has the sugar and the fat and the salt together, which makes us want to eat more. So it's how we've engineered our food as well to drive that craving for more, even more food. And that's part of the message of this exhibit, is that it is about sort of the, you know, modern life, you know, and how our bodies adapt well or don't adapt well to sort of the pace of modern life and the impact on our physical bodies.
Mm. Well, this is really catching the big fish. This is a great exhibit, and you've done such a great job. I've been to the Science Center many times in the different exhibits you bring in. And I thought it was interesting, your doctorate's in anthropology, and you were in Africa dealing with the bartering and the trading of livestock and things. And so you've employed that to negotiate or to talk to people from different areas, and it must have been quite a process to even bring this exhibit here, as in the other exhibits you bring here. I mean, just it's not just sitting in a college teaching. You're really having to deal with. You have a bit of the horse trader to have to, you know, get some of these things here. I mean, what emotionally this must have been a real roller coaster just to land this exhibit. What was that like?
Oh, that was very exciting. This is our fourth Body Worlds exhibit we did, and the first time we did it, it had not come to the Americas, but it had been pretty controversial in certain countries in Europe. And colleagues had looked at the catalog and said, oh, yeah, we can't bring this to our museum because it's quite controversial. But we looked at it, and we thought, this is looks really like a phenomenally educational exhibit. So the first thing we did was we brought over Günther von Hagens, and we said, who is this guy, you know, and what is his intent and all of that. And so we met him and his wife, Angelina. He's an anatomist, and she's a pathologist, and we're very impressed with their interest in basically democratizing anatomy and letting the common people, you know, having us look at what our body looks like inside, as opposed to just leaving that for the professionals. So that was his interest. And then what we did is we did a thorough ethics review. We put together an ethics committee to look at the policy and practices and the source of the bodies and the informed consent. And we hired an independent ethicist to go to Germany to look at the records. He was a fellow that did some work for UNESCO and was also a German speaker, so he could speak in German and look at all the original records. And and so once we felt confident that it was it was ethical. We had another committee also make recommendations on how it should be presented and how to deal with children and the exhibit and all of that. Then we opened the first one in 2005, and it was just an instant success. It was unbelievable. And we did evaluation and found that people learn more from this exhibit than any other exhibit we've had. A year after seeing the exhibit, people remembered health messages, and a great percentage of people said they changed their lifestyle, their habits, based on seeing what the body looks like inside. So it was very, very dramatic.
Yeah, you mentioned the children. It was kind of cute. The last one of the last things is on procreation, and this woman had an interesting job standing there to make sure the little kids don't go in without parental consent.
Yeah,
I had to laugh because she was a really nice woman, but she's having to watch a by the way, there's some sexual content in here. Make sure your kids are okay with that. But it basically showed a man and woman having intercourse, their bodies. And but, you know, what a great way for kids to kind of learn in an education way, in a science way, rather than, you know, written on a bathroom wall or something.
Yeah. I mean, we thought that you know, the sex couple was really a good educational tool. We looked at it to make sure it actually showed something, and that, you know, the act, what happens inside the body during sex, has really for a long time been unclear. So this shows a lot of the details of what happens inside the body. And we've had a doctor look at that, and actually it was interesting. He pointed out, okay, this is where people have problems with infertility, you know, if this is blocked or this or that. It was really, really interesting. And then we also have a lot of displays on sexually transmitted infections. Of course, the same process for procreation can also pass on sexually transmitted infections if somebody's infected. And that's a real problem because Los Angeles County has the most cases in the country of chlamydia and gonorrhea and syphilis. Isn't that something? So we talk about steps to reduce the risk of STIs and information and local resources and all of that. So we feel that together those two messages are very strong.
It's so important. Yeah, I have a friend that she's a very religious person, and as a result of her ethics has been celibate for a really long time, and called us crying a week or two ago that I made a big mistake. This guy, you know, drinking, and we got drunk and messed around, and this guy was a player. And here this woman, I mean, the first time she's had sex in a long time, got a herpes, and she's just so upset and everything. And so it's important to let people know, you know. A lot of times the schools are supposed to have health courses and let people know about, you know, if someone's promiscuous like this and you unprotected sex, but you did that in the exhibit in a very informative way. And speaking of procreation, I know I'm throwing a lot of things at you, but it was just so interesting, everything. There was a pregnant woman towards the end of the exhibit before the film on the plastination process, and there was actually a baby in the womb, I believe. Was that an actual pregnant woman that it was in an accident or something, and everything was preserved in the pregnant state? Do you know?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, she was 5 months pregnant.
Wow.
Yeah, that was very unfortunate. Yeah.
And just looking since the exhibit, I look at people different. Like, I mean, just like everything, it just was so eye-opening. Like, even all the blood vessels in the face and things that you show, and I thought, I had no idea we have all these blood vessels and all this. And, you know, of course, that's why, you know, I get a bloody nose when you fall. And, you know, I was at the filming down in at the beach recently, and this boy about 30 feet from me was doing a bike stunt, you know, that he shouldn't have been doing. You know, boys, we fool around. And he was doing a wheelie or something, and I could see that he was going to wreck and go over his handlebars. And another boy was about to plow into him, and I yelled, "Stop, no!" And this was just a week or so ago. Another boy heard me yell and avoided crashing into the other boy that had just hit the pavement. But then I ran over to the boy, and the blood's coming out of his mouth and his nose, and he was just so scared from the blood. And I think he might have thought it was worse than it was, but I thought about the boy at the exhibit, and I was like, oh, that's why that boy bled so much. Yeah. All those blood vessels in the nose and the mouth when he went on his face into the pavement. So it's just like even looking at people or faces or bodies, I feel like I understand so much more.
Yes, that's right. I mean, we've got a number of specimens on display that just show the blood vessels.
Mm-hmm.
Gunther dissolves everything else, so all that's left are these blood vessels, and he's been getting better and better at showing tinier blood vessels, so you really see the network in the body. It's really pretty amazing. And that's what's nice about the full body specimens and those blood vessel specimens. They really show how everything is connected in the body. And one thing is all the systems work together, whereas sort of the slices and the organs really focus more, I think, on lessons on health and ill health and how our behavior affects our health.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, in our closing minutes, we have want to open it up for questions. You can email them in to richardrossilive@gmail.com, richardrossilive@gmail.com, or call the phone line on your screen, 347-637-2379. So we have a few minutes left. Can we come back about 30 seconds to you, Dr. Perloff,
sure,
and any questions that might come in? So we'll be right back in about 30
okay, sure,
seconds here at Richard Rossi Live with a couple questions.
Smoke signals. I wonder what they say. Me read him, Kemosami. Let's see. They say, don't forget to listen to Rich Rossi Live. So that's it. Sounds like a wise thing to do. Quick. We better find ourselves a radio. Hi-ho, Rich Rossi Live, and away!
Gee, I don't mean to bother you, Doc, but it's a mystery to me why it took so long to get this show on the air. It certainly ties up all the loose ends with Christian talk. Gee, my wife just loves this show, Doc.
Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and we're here with Dr. Diane Perloff. We had a question come in. Can you still hear me, Dr. Diane?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, great. Once in a while we have a technical thing when we leave and come back. We have a question come in. This show started on a Christian radio station, 101.5 FM, and now our audience is about half of the fans from that background and about half not from that background because of the celebrities we have on. So it is interesting this question came in. I didn't realize someone sent in that some representatives of the church, some Catholic groups and some Jewish rabbis
mm-hmm.
brought up ethical issues. You mentioned getting the
mm-hmm.
ethics committee involved and saying
mm-hmm.
it wasn't reverence towards the human body. Just off the top of my head, though, I would imagine throughout history we've had to study the human body in the medical world to learn about the body. And, of course, Da Vinci, who was, and Michelangelo, some of the great artists that the church commissioned with their art and their work, did a lot of drawings based on the human body. Did you have to deal with any of that religious part of it? And I wasn't aware till this question that there was a religious issue that was raised. Did that come up for you at all, or...?
Yes, that's true. We did have on our ethics committee, Pastor Chip Murray is on our committee, and we've had Rabbi Feinstein and the previous ethics committee, we did have I can't remember this Father Benson. We had various people on our ethics committee who were all posted, of course, in our introductory label, and they all felt the people who donated their bodies, there was full consent, that it was informed consent. They knew what they were donating their bodies for. They were donating them for public exhibition, that the exhibit was respectful in the design, and that it was educational. Those were the main issues. And then they were fine with it. And people have a choice of whether they come or not. But those were important issues, that the exhibit had to treat the human body respectfully, and there was free choice, and it was educational. So, and it's clearly educational from all that we've heard from our audiences. So we did have that. We did have, some dispute from a conservative rabbi who felt it wasn't proper, but he also felt that, you know, the conservative Jews then would not be the ones donating their body for this particular purpose. But we understand the exhibit is not for everyone, but we did get, you know, the approval from a number of the religious organizations, people representing the organizations.
Wow, so interesting, Dr. Perlov and Karen in Ohio. That's an answer to your question. There were pastors involved, and Pastor Murray, who was a pastor, I believe, here in Los Angeles of a large First African Methodist, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's very interesting because, you know, different religious views, and that might go back to your anthropology studies, like, for example, I was raised Catholic, and as a general rule, I remember growing up Catholic, there was a general feeling against cremation, that it wasn't, that the body is a temple, you know, it should be preserved or should be, of course, we, being so so morbid, forgive me, but we decompose in the, you know, ground. I mean, it's not, you know, but it's like the cremation, they felt like that was not, you know, as honorable to the body. And, I mean, now with just the cost, things have changed. More and more people are doing cremation just from the economic thing, but I guess religious is part of the anthropology aspect of the issues you had to navigate with this exhibit. That's very interesting. I think your training has come into play again and again and again in anthropology to deal with all these things.
Yeah, it has. It has, definitely. Yeah, and especially from dealing with people from various different cultures as well. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I know I think I've went a bit over time with the interview. Do you have time for one more question?
Oh, sure.
Okay, great. Okay, this one comes from Amanda up in Fresno, California. She said she loved the exhibit, and at the end that she wrote, there was a question about life, you know, appreciating life, and what do you want to do before you die? What do you want to do with your life? And she said she wrote she wanted to go to Hawaii, and she wanted to learn to live a more, you know, authentic life to her passions. And I remember that, too, and my friend and I walking through that, and everybody's writing what they want to do with their life because it makes you appreciate life. It celebrates our life. It makes us appreciate life and our bodies. So she asked what you, Dr. Perlov, and what I would like to do in our lives that we haven't done yet.
Oh, that's wonderful, that I haven't done yet. Oh, my gosh. Well, I have two little grandchildren.
Oh,
so
congratulations. That's great.
Yes, it was just wonderful. They live nearby. So all of my wishes are really about, you know, spending more time with my grandchildren and watching them grow up. That's just really important to me. And teaching them lessons of life that I've learned.
That's great. Yeah,
you know,
well, Amanda, for me, Amanda, I just want to say that this exhibition made me want to take better care of myself and try to improve my body and my longevity. And I'm being more vigilant on my blood pressure and my eating. And, you know, I unfortunately lost my youngest brother this past March. I was the oldest of five, and that was just devastating and shocking, and I've had grief and shock and PTSD and all kind of things from him dying. And it's made me feel so graced to still be here as the oldest, because my first thought was, you know, gee, I'm the oldest, you know, shouldn't I have gone first? But it's made me really want to, like you said, live more authentically and do some of the creative things. I'm working on a film project, and I wrote a novel that I want to see made into a film, and I have a lot of creative things. And it makes me more determined to do those things that bring joy and passion to me, and to take better care of myself and hopefully improve. You know, I used to smoke a lot, not cigarettes, but I used to smoke a pipe every night pretty addictively. I would get home and just sit there and just smoke that pipe. That pipe never left my mouth, you know, and this went back to a grandpap figure, Pap Altenbach, that used to always smoke a pipe, and I was close with him, and I started smoking this pipe kind of pretty young. But, you know, that pipe is gone. I mean, I pretty recently I'm like, you know, I have an occasional cigar, I must admit, but I don't want to do any of this black lung stuff. I know the cigarettes are the worst, but I want to cut back on stuff like that, and I want to live a full, abundant life, and I want to eat better, and I want to keep exercising. And, you know, life is such a gift, and thank you so much, Dr. Perlow, for helping us see what a gift
yeah.
life is through this exhibit. And I encourage all of you to please see this exhibit. It'll change your life, I think. It'll, like
mm-hmm.
me, it'll make people think, you know, I got to take care of this body. This body is such a gift. And I have to admit that some of my, I know it's a bit controversial, but some of my kind of, you know, it's interesting that Karen, one of the listeners, brought up the religious objection because, and I know the exhibit is not stating this, but I think there was a lot of support for faith in this exhibit, in the sense of,
mm-hmm.
for me, when I go through this, I think, what a masterful body. I mean, this body is so amazing. You know, it just
mm-hmm.
gave me a sense of, wow, what an incredibly designed
mm-hmm.
body. And, you know, if you want to make a case for intelligent design or from this exhibit, I think it makes a case that this is the bodies are just amazingly designed, however you believe that happened, number one. And number two, I felt it was like a pro-life. I found it very, in a sense, affirming of life, you know, even though religious
mm-hmm.
people would object to it.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a lot of controversy, and we've had people debate the pro-life issue, but going through the exhibit of the baby, the development of the baby at the different weeks, it's looking like a baby at a certain point, and we all have different views on that. But I thought it was – I never saw any pro-life advocate make a more clear scientific display of what the fetus is looking like at those different weeks and different months. That was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. You know, some people's criticism has been with people who don't see the exhibit that it's an exhibit about death because
mm-hmm.
there's dead bodies. But anybody who sees the exhibit, you realize it's an exhibit about life and
mm-hmm.
it's an exhibit about us and how we are and how we are on the inside and how we live. And you just have to be in the exhibit 5 minutes to see that everybody has that attitude in this exhibit. They're looking at these specimens and looking at themselves and thinking about how their body works and about issues of life.
Yeah,
I really agree with you.
I left really feeling life more alive, more grateful for my
yeah.
life. And I felt kind of grateful for these people that were willing to donate their bodies that we might do this and see this. And I know I've taken
mm-hmm.
you over your time and you're a busy person. I thank you so much, Dr. Perlow, for all your work and for this wonderful exhibit. And, you know, hey, I'll be the first to admit that I, too, felt a little squeamish when I first heard about it. What? These are real human bodies. But I was so drawn
yeah,
to it.
Yeah.
And I learned more about my health and my body in one afternoon walking through this than I'd learned in years prior. I really, truly did. I'm very grateful to you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you for being with us. God bless you and Dr. Perlow, and keep up the good work.
Okay, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And I want to let you know, the rest of you listening, thank you for listening, that we have some really interesting shows coming up. On Friday, we have a show coming up that already just advanced people wanting to hear the podcast is one of our most listened to shows of all time, just the advance request to get the link for the podcast. And it has to do with O.J. Simpson. We've had some other shows on O.J. here. I've had Nicole Brown Simpson's sister on, and we've talked about all of that. But I want to let you know that this Friday, 1 p.m. Pacific time on Richard Rossi Live, O.J. has been incarcerated in Vegas on an alleged armed robbery where he had some memorabilia that was once his and fell into the hands of someone else, I think, in the all that he went through with the you know, civil judgments and the Goldmans wanting money and things like that. So a lot of his prized memorabilia, his Heisman Trophy, a lot of these things fell into other hands. In fact, my son and I were at an auction here in Los Angeles on Sunset Boulevard, and we saw his Heisman and all these things. It kind of felt sad, like certain things that, gee, it wasn't just his stuff. It was his accomplishments as a football great that were just – auctioned off. I mean, how the mighty have fallen. But anyway, so as you probably know, unless you've been living under a rock, O.J. got in trouble with some guys going in when they found the guys that had some of this stuff and forcibly, allegedly forcibly retrieving back his stuff. But because someone brandished a gun, it was a armed robbery charge, and he's been sitting in jail for 9 years. Many believe that the judge was doing a payback verdict of the 33-year sentence on O.J. due to what had happened here in California, where he was, as you all know, the trial of the century, accused of murdering Nicole and Ron Goldman. He was acquitted in the criminal trial, later found liable in a civil trial. Anyways, his closest friend, Tom Scotto, who was a reason he was in Vegas and found out about the stuff being there, and this whole thing came about because Tom was getting married in a wedding chapel in Vegas. O.J. was best man. O.J. heard, hey, by the way, this guy comes to him. O.J., by the way, this guy has all your stuff and he's selling in a hotel room in Vegas. So O.J. got a couple guys that he felt had his back, and let's go get it back. But Tom has been with him through the trial, heartbroken at the long verdict. He's remained a true friend to O.J. through all his ups and downs. Tom is going to be with us as this is about to come down on the parole hearing of whether O.J. gets out. We will know Friday whether O.J. is getting out after the 9 years, and Tom will be here with us to give you the inside scoop on being O.J.'s best friend, O.J.'s best man in his wedding. And that is this Friday at 1 p.m. There's still so much interest in O.J. Cuba Gooding just played him on the recent cable show that I thought was pretty well done. And then they did a recent documentary as well that was very well done. I believe it might have been CNN. But anyways, Friday at 1 p.m., O.J.'s best friend with us here as we have the news come down, which for O.J. and his friends, good news if he gets out, if he wasn't O.J., he would have been out probably by now on the whole situation. But because he's O.J., I think the odds they're saying is not quite as high as if it would have been John Simpson instead of O.J. Simpson. But the Vegas bookmakers are saying that it's over 50% he's going to finally get out. So anyways, that's Friday. Now, Thursday at 10:30 a.m., a very interesting show on the new charismatic movements. IHOP, International House of Prayer out of Kansas City, Bethel Church in Northern California. A lot of the new charismatic churches have had a lot of stuff going on that seems a bit strange, a bit out there. Bethel Church has claimed gold dust and angel feathers fall in their services. And the people, there's been a lot of strange stuff going on in some of these new charismatic movements. There were offshoots of some of the movements I was actually involved in and a leader in back in the day. We have an author coming on Thursday, a definitive scholar has written a book, The New Apostolic Reformation, History of a Modern Charismatic Movement. We're going to get into, in a very deep way, some very thorough discussion on the latest kind of charismatic movements, the Heidi Bakers, the Bill Johnsons, the Mike Bickles, the John Wimbers, the Todd Bentleys, all that kind of stuff. So those of you that know me from the charismatic Christian background, Thursday we're going to really get into looking at the good, bad, and ugly out of these movements with a scholar, John Weaver, who's written a fantastic book on it. Anyways, thank you for tuning in. Go with God and be blessed, and have a great rest of your day, and get down to see the California Science Center Body Works exhibit. It really, truly is enlightening. God bless you.